we are the super nerdy Sailor Guardians who fight for love and justice. And this is Across the Mooniverse.
Hello, and welcome to Across the Mooniverse. My name is Maddie.
And I'm Mike.
Hey. Hey, Mike.
Yeah. Yes.
Happy Moon Day.
Happy Moon Day. I was doing the head bob like Night at the Roxbury during the opening music.
It feels every time that intro, it's just great.
It's kind of like the intro to Sailor Moon.
A little bit, yeah.
When we did the first, probably, I don't know. What did we do? 15 episodes before we had the long break, something like that. We only published like 12 of them or something. Anyway, I always used to driving over to your home studio.
Yeah.
As we did back then, I always used to just play the theme song over and over again to get pumped up to record the episode. I don't do that anymore, unfortunately.
We should plan a thing. Like, we know when we're gonna record, so we might as well just like 10 minutes before.
I mean, if I was smart enough to know how to like have recorded music on my phone, I would have, you know what I mean? But it's too complicated for me. Anyway, I am pumped for this episode. So today we're talking about season one, episode 25, Jupiter, the powerful girl in love.
What?
So the first thing I know we're getting a new guardian. And so the first thing I looked for was to see if there was a change in the title sequence, because as you recall, in the title sequence, originally we just saw Sailor Moon and there were two girls in silhouette until they were revealed to be Sailor Mercury and Sailor Mars. And so I was wondering if perhaps the title sequence would have a silhouetted girl or a new, you know, a fourth Sailor Guardian in that little part of the title sequence. And there was no change to the title sequence yet.
It's expensive. It's expensive to change the title sequence when you're drawing everything by hand.
The Simpsons do it every single.
Well, you know what? They also make a whole heck of a lot of money.
But I mean, to be fair, it's at the very end of the sequence. It's when they jump on the couch. It's always different. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. Yeah, actually.
Can you imagine how out of ideas they are for that at this point? It's been out for like 28 years.
They're probably just like, I don't know. How about we just make them just regular sit there this time?
I don't know. I love The Simpsons, but I quit watching a long time ago. I mean,
yeah.
I kind of feel like I know what The Simpsons have to say about everything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't need for them to chime in anymore. I know their take on stuff.
True.
But, you know, I mean, God love Matt Groening. I mean, what an amazing thing. That show is the longest running primetime show in television history.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right,
this isn't a podcast about that show, though. This is a podcast about Sailor Moon.
It's about Sailor fucking Moon.
And I will say one more thing before we go into the episode proper is our intro bed. The music is very, very similar. Well, not very, very similar, but similar enough to one of my favorite ending songs later in the series.
Wow.
So, that might have been my subconscious motivation for choosing it, but I went through a lot of royalty free music.
You found some good ones.
Yeah.
All right. So the episode opens with the teaser, and the teaser is Sailor. It's a Sailor Moon voiceover, and she says, "What in the world? A human got turned into a monster? Now I can't punish him? I've never encountered anything like this in my entire career at Sailor Moon. But this is no time to worry about that. What the heck? I'm just gonna do it in the name of the moon. I'll punish you."
And so but she can't punish. She just said that.
Exactly. You can punish without killing. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess. Also, who's that girl that's beating up those dudes?
I know.
That seems weird.
I'm guessing that's Jupiter, the powerful girl in love.
No, I mean, Jupiter has a very specific look, I'm sure. That's just a mysterious girl in a brown skirt with rose earrings.
So, but I liked about this episode is we're back to form. It opens with the Dark Kingdom, which is how they used to open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it used to open with Juice and Toast.
That's right, Juice and Toast, the Dark Kingdom.
Way back in the day.
But, I mean, but Nephrite was spending so much time avoiding
yeah,
Green Barrel that we barely saw the Dark Kingdom with Nebrite.
Yeah.
So big,
he,
big
he
Dark
was pulling
Kingdom.
A straight up Henry David Thoreau, just hanging out in the woods.
Yeah, he was.
That's a deep cut for all you literature people.
Nobody paid that much attention in high school, Maddie.
No.
We got a big sequence of the Dark Kingdom, right? It opens with a close-up on Beryl, and she says, "Awaken, great ruler. To you I offer vital energy." So, you know, here's the thing is that I'm imagining that it's Naru's energy, and they're just passing it around. Because they're talking about this stuff like it's the best heroin in town. You know what I mean? It's just like, try some of this.
Naru has some good energy. It's been said a lot.
Yeah. So Queen Beryl is kneeling down and levitating a white orb above her raised hands. A wisp of a white light spiral around the orb. And she says, "Hear my plea and awaken once more, great ruler of ours. Now is the time. Arise, O great one." And she shoots a stream of white light up towards the ceiling, lighting up what looks like a monster skull. That's kind of what it looked like. Into the left eye, while the right eye socket remains empty. Swirls of white light cause a red pupil to become excited. The skull has both pointed teeth and tusks, and it looks like it's vomiting fire. So, but it's normally in the Dark Kingdom, it's just kind of like streaks of color and stuff like this. Yeah. This is more of a form and a shape.
Yeah.
So I'm imagine that's a great ruler in kind of some sort of, you know, not fully awakened state.
It's confirmed very shortly after there when a mildly robotic voice goes.
Yeah. The ruler begins to speak in a deep, sinister voice.
Yeah.
"So it seems as if the energy from the humans has stirred me from my long sleep." Beryl agrees. However, the great ruler says it's not enough and feels herself being drawn back into a deep sleep.
She's like, "I'm sleepy.
Yeah.
This isn't enough energy."
So the great ruler says, "You must locate the legendary silver crystal at once. Without that silver crystal, it will be impossible for me to make my restoration complete." And Beryl says, "We're searching for it, but it is yet to be found." And then the ruler says, "When the seven great monsters are revived together with the rainbow crystals, only then will the legendary silver crystal shine brightly enough to be found." So here's the thing, right? Is that that's a critical piece of information. So everybody who has been assigned to find the silver crystal has just basically been spinning their wheel. They were never going to find it.
Listen.
It was never going to shine. It was never going to shine bright enough to be found until these seven monsters were revived.
Yeah, but listen, the great ruler was sweepy, so they couldn't share that until now. They were taking a nap.
And so it's like when I fell asleep when the guy was going to deliver a free eight ball to me and I missed it. How sleepy are you? An eight ball, for those of you who, I was just talking about the game of billiards. Previous attempts to locate the silver crystal were pointless. It's too dim to be found. So, I mean, Zoysa had a fool's errand at that point.
Yeah.
And then Beryl goes, of course. Like, it's as if Beryl actually knew that, but had forgotten it. You know what I mean? Like she assigned them to find the silver crystal. That's right. We need to revive the seven monsters. Thank God Naru's energy was powerful enough to awaken the sleepy great ruler enough to give that
Naru
critical piece of information.
It's like, you know, it's like a cutscene. Like, you have to be a certain level to gain this information. So, you know, you completed all the side quests. You beat the first couple of easy bosses. And now you have the good stuff.
It's kind of like Final Fantasy, you know, those really long quest chains.
Yeah.
You know, to get something done. It's like, how long have I been looking for the Moogle's keys that he lost? You know, that's how I feel about this silver crystal. It keeps getting basically more and more complicated.
Yeah.
All right. So that's the end of the Dark Kingdom for now.
Yes. It should be said that Queen Beryl says we need to look for the seven great monsters, get the rainbow crystals.
Right.
And they will lead us to Gein's Wee Show.
They talk about it some more a little bit later on.
Yes, they do.
There's more.
But we do need to mention the rainbow crystals because they will come up later.
Yeah, but and we're going to talk about the fact that I need more information on why they're called rainbow crystals, because they do not have any kind of prismatic value to them. The only rainbow crystal I've seen is just red. Anyway.
Well, so, what's Roy G. Biv, Mike? Roy G. Biv. This is the first rainbow crystal we've ever seen.
It's the R. I get it. Yeah. All I know is that the next one better be fucking orange. So anyway, Usagi's running late for school once again.
What?
And then Luna, who, by the way, at this point, it's a new voice actor in the dub version for Luna. Luna's being played by a new voice actor. It's a little,
okay.
It was noticeable.
That happens with in the original dub. That happens with Usagi, like her voice actor changes. And it's kind of alarming.
Kind of jarring. It was just noticeable. It wasn't jarring for Luna. Luna doesn't talk as much, so it's not as noticeable.
It's true.
Anyway, Luna's carrying Usagi's lunch, and she's running alongside. She's carrying it in her mouth. She's running alongside. Usagi rounds the corner.
And a blind corner, mind her. She didn't even shout corner.
Yeah, it plows into one of three teenage boys. Mm-hmm. I call them goon boys.
Are they teenage boys? I don't know if they're teenage boys. They look like
they're goons.
Yeah, they're definitely goons.
Yeah. And she knocks this guy to the ground. She apologizes to the blue shirt goon. Mm-hmm. And that boy is talking about breaking his leg.
Clearly.
Which would be pretty easy to determine, actually. A broken leg is something you can get.
I don't know. It depends on the break.
One of the other boys, this one in a yellow shirt, asks Usagi what she's going to do about the broken leg. And Usagi freaks out. And then all of a sudden, a female voice from off screen says, "She said sorry." And the boys go, "What?" And we pan up to a long brown skirt and white school uniform with mm-hmm. brown trim to reveal a tall brunette. And she said, "I saw the whole thing, boys. She barely bumped you. That's pretty cool of you to con an innocent girl." And group number three in a green tank top faces to view the girl and says, "How dare you?" And the other goon says, "No one ever talks to us like that." The new girl dodges the advance of the green goon and then steps up to the side, causing the yellow goon to swerve and miss and fall to the ground. And Usagi says, "Wow," and kind of impressed. Mm-hmm. Blue shirt goon runs away. The new girl asks Usagi if she's okay. Usagi says, "Yes." The new girl says, "You take care." And as she walks away, Usagi notices
she flips the goon over her shoulder.
Yeah, she does. Yeah,
she straight up like beats these guys up.
Well, the title is "The Powerful Girl," so I mean she's powerful. And she walks away. Usagi notices the new girl's got rose shaped earrings, and she says, "So
ooh, and
cool."
Is Usagi a little like crushing on her?
Yeah, she's definitely got a girl crush. Yeah,
yeah.
I think so. All right, so then we cut to the Dark Kingdom again. More Dark Kingdom. Okay, and who's Beryl talking to now?
She's talking to Zoisite and Kunzite.
Right, and she repeats.
In the cadre of random others who create the giant circle.
Yeah, she repeats the info the great ruler gave her about the seven great monsters in the rainbow crystals.
They were sealed away by their despicable enemy in the past, and now they have been reborn as humans.
And now I have even more contempt for this vital piece of information, because Kunzite says, "I remember everything about the seven great monsters."
He's like, "Oh yeah,
they were the strongest of our allies, but they were sealed away eons ago by our enemy." So okay, Kunzite is like some kind of gay mentor to Zoisite, right? And Zoisite's job that he was assigned by Queen Beryl is to find the silver crystal. Kunzite remembers everything about the seven great monsters. So meaning that he knew that the seven great monsters had to be revived before the silver crystal would shine bright enough to be found.
I have never heard somebody describe Kunzite as a gay mentor before.
Well,
that's the part I'm hung up on.
That's what he is to me. That's how I see him.
Well, I mean, if you're going to have a gay mentor, he's not the worst. He's not great, but he's not the worst.
He withheld precious information from his...
And he's also kind of evil. But also, he's not... Okay, Kunzite is like an ogre, and ogres are like onions. They have layers.
Okay, so then we have a flashback.
Yes.
Red eyes pop open, and seven dark monsters form and gather together, and we have a voiceover from Queen Beryl.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "Your memory serves you well. The legendary seven monsters were the most powerful warriors of all. White shot waves radiate from the monsters until the day when we suffered a great loss to our enemy. Those cowards sealed away the seven gray monsters into separate fragments of the legendary silver crystals.
Those bitches.
They took enemies, which in my opinion would just be humanity, right? But apparently this was humanity that had some skills.
Yeah.
They were able to take these monsters and put them into fragments of the legendary silver crystals. Those fragments are the rainbow crystals, right?
Yeah.
So the monsters get swallowed by different colored orbs as they drift away. So maybe they will be different colors.
I mean, they're different colored rainbow orbs, so.
Okay, all right.
I'm so excited.
Like, I just imagine rainbow crystals would just sparkle like prisms, you know, the rainbow crystal.
No.
All the colors of the rainbow.
Yes. I'm so excited. Okay, my favorite, this is the hardest part for me. My favorite rainbow crystal is the very last one, so I am going to have to wait so long.
All right. And Roy G. Biv is seven letters.
Yes.
That seven fragments. So I'm really counting on orange to be in the next one. Anyway, so what have I written here?
Yeah.
Oh, and banished them to Earth. So the monsters they became rainbow crystals, and then they were banished to Earth.
Yes.
Which supports the theory that the Dark Kingdom is located in a different planet, dimension, or realm from Earth.
Yes, so, it supports the theory. There's like, you're saying, okay, so here I am, you're saying things, and I'm just sitting here going, because I don't want to spoil anything, but I love your theory.
I can only know what I know.
It makes me so happy. I'm like, it's so fun for me to sit here and listen to you theorize about what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm just like, so this is a joy for me. This is why I do the podcast, everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it would be easy enough to assume that the Dark Kingdom is just the underworld. You know what I mean?
That sure.
Some sort of hell, you know, beneath the earth. But this, you know, if they were banished to Earth, that would put them, you know, in a realm outside of the planet. So, you know, I'm just trying to figure out where the Dark Kingdom is.
And I mean, it was kind of like when they showed the whatchamajoodles, the seven guys, the seven great monsters. That's the words I was looking
there you
for.
Go.
They were out in space. So
yeah. Okay.
I mean,
and so then Joyce asks, so what's become of the seven monsters? And Kunzai replies, they lost their memory of once being monsters, and they have been reborn as humans.
Joyce, how do you know all of this?
Right. And then Joyce says, I see. So if we remove the rainbow crystals from the reborn humans, will it lead us to the silver crystal? And Beryl says, yes. Seven great monsters will be reincarnated.
Duh.
She then produces a dark crystal from her main orb
mm-hmm.
that has been modified to
it's
react to
the same dark
to the
crystal that Nephrite made.
Okay. But this one has been modified, though, because
yes.
It's modified to react to the presence of the rainbow crystals.
Yeah. She took the dark crystal and then modded it, like hacked the crystal magic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because she has you old lady Alzheimer's, where she forgot about the seven monsters in the rainbow crystals.
You know.
Yeah.
We don't know how old she is.
So Zoysia takes
the dark crystal. And says, thanks, Queen Beryl, and then immediately puts the crystal on projector mode. And it reveals some guy who holds a crystal.
Yep. Yep, a vortex of energy shows the image of a young man with a blue baseball cap and an orange hoodie. This is a rainbow crystal. This is a rainbow crystal inside this boy. And that's the end of the dark. That's the end of the Dark Kingdom. We got some new lore here with the seven great monsters and the rainbow crystals.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is a lot of dialogue for Beryl. You know, this is, I like that. She's, you know, I'm not happy with the fact that she, you know, forgot some critical information. But anyway, she has now delivered that information to us. So good for you, Queen Beryl.
Yes. We're now
we go to the school.
Meanwhile, back at Juban Middle School, Usagi is eating lunch, or rather, excited to go eat lunch.
Her favorite time of the day at
yes,
school.
It's her favorite class.
Yep. She's sitting down to eat lunch, and what did she notice? What did she see?
The girl with the rose earring. Oh my god! Oh my god! Oh my god! And before she can investigate anymore, who else appears? Harumino, of course, our local baby boy. Umino says,
that girl you're stalking is a transfer student who just joined class six today. So, question for you. Is that like sixth grade? Is that can't be sixth grade.
No.
Because they're older than that.
I believe Usagi's in class 5.
Okay.
And
it's like a freshman or a sophomore?
It's like a homeroom.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So
okay.
Yeah. It just basically denotes what your homeroom is, where your classroom gotcha. Is, and who gotcha. Your classmates are.
Very good. So she joined class 6 today. Her name is Makoto Kino. And the word is that she's incredibly strong. Turns out she was kicked out of her last school for fighting. If I were you, I'd keep my distance.
Usagi does not care. And why does she not care? Because
she's got a girl crush.
Makoto Kino has food. Delicious looking, lovely, cute food. And that is enough for Usagi to break the ice.
Yeah, yeah. Umino's still warning her and realizes that she has moved away from him and she's slowly sneaking closer to Makoto. Usagi admires his lunch and her handbag. Makoto recognizes Usagi and invites her to join her for lunch. Mm-hmm. And of course, Usagi says that she doesn't eat, that she's, you know, she doesn't eat much, but she'll go
not
ahead.
Not a big eater, she lied.
Yeah. And then Makoto says that everyone at the school seems to be afraid to talk to her. Mm-hmm. And Usagi tells Makoto that her mom makes a great lunch.
No, not only that. Is something to note here is Usagi immediately gives her a nickname and asks if that's okay, which is very, very forward because usually when you first meet somebody, you're going to call them, you know, you're going to be very formal. In Japan, I mean, their whole society and language, a lot of it is based on how polite you are.
So what is senpai? That is an older classmate?
Yes, senpai? It is an older classmate or like a mentor. Like a couple of years older than you, that you look up to.
So in this case, Makoto would probably be Usagi's senpai.
Well, no, because while Usagi does look up to her because she's tall, they are the same age. So
the same age,
and they're in the same grade.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is Rei the same age as Usagi? Or
they're all old? They're all of them are in the same grade. They're
14.
They're 14. Like yeah, they're all four in they're 14. Unless of course they were born later in the year, then they might be 15. But you know, whatever.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So Usagi immediately gives her a nickname, which is very, very forward of her.
The nickname is what? Because now my notes I wrote down Makoto because that's her name.
Yeah.
What is Usagi's nickname for her?
She immediately calls her Mako-chan.
Mako,
Mako-chan, because it's a shortening of her name, Makoto, and then she uses the honorific chan, which is very informal. It's what you do for people who you're very close to. So normally, if it's somebody you just met, you would use the honorific san if they're like similar in age and.
So chan is like an intimate.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Usagi uses it for everybody. She immediately called Amy, Ami-chan, Rei-chan, Mako-chan. So
it's because Usagi's all about intimacy. So
yeah, she's just super nice. She's super friendly and she just wants to be friends with people. She like, you don't seem as scary as people are telling me. You when she met Ami-chan, like she was told, oh, don't go near that girl. She's a snob, this, that, and the other, because she, you know, is so smart. She's above all
of us. Right. Right.
And Usagi was like, is she really, though? I'm going to get to know her. And the same thing with Rei, now with Mako. Everyone's saying, I don't know about her. And she's like, no. I think there's potential there.
Right.
Which is one of the main reasons I love Usagi.
She's just gotten a pretty good warning from Umino. the dude has got all of the juice on people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He's your go-to guy if you want info on somebody. And he's telling Usagi to stay away. Usagi totally ignores him. And so then we go to the Game Center Crown. And
it should be said that she compliments Usagi compliments Mako-chan's mom as an awesome chef. And then Mako-chan mentions that
she made
it all herself. So Usagi is very impressed by her. And then Umino is very impressed by Usagi's ability to make friends.
To make friends, yeah. Which
and
is
then
true.
Back
I
the
mean,
arcade.
She is pretty good at making friends.
Yes, she's extremely good at it.
My sister was really good at making friends. Well, she just came naturally to her. She always had a lot of friends. It's very easy for her.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Game Center Crown, and Usagi asks Makoto why she isn't wearing the school uniform. And Makoto says, what I'm wearing now suits me better.
Yeah.
And
this one suits me more.
And then Usagi notes that it looks like Motoki isn't working there today. And Makoto asks if Motoki is Usagi's boyfriend. Or no, it seems like she's going to ask if it's Usagi's boyfriend, but she says Mikoto, Usagi's older brother or cousin.
Yeah.
And Usagi gets all flustered.
Did she say cousin in the dub?
In the dub, yeah.
Interesting. She just says older brother in the sub, but that's because, and it's a logical assumption for her to make, because Usagi calls him Motoki Onisan, and Onisan means older brother.
Okay. There you go.
It's an easy thing to confuse.
So at that point, Usagi gets all flustered and responds by telling Motoki that he's very special, but never labels a very special what. He's just a very special and just hangs there.
Yeah, because then, she notices that Makoto-chan has already moved on from the conversation and is now playing video games.
And she plays a Sailor B game.
Yes.
And then Ami and Rei and Luna enter.
Yeah.
And Ami tells Usagi that Luna is concerned about Makoto. And Usagi blows it off, saying Luna worries too much. Usagi introduces Makoto to Ami and Rei as Ami, the really smart one, and Rei, the really mean one. Rei asks for a specific date and time that she was mean to Usagi. And Usagi says, don't you think you're being mean to me right now? And Makoto goes, how nice, you get along so well. And Rei says, no way, as soon as we see each other, starts an argument every time.
Because they bicker like siblings.
Yeah. And she says, well, the more angry, the closer you are.
Yep.
And then Ami says, that's a good one, Makoto. And Makoto notices Luna and starts scratching under Luna's chin. Luna purrs with enthusiastic approval.
And then
the girl's attention is drawn to a crowd gathering around a boy playing the skill train game. We see him collect a Sailor Bee plush doll. And right after that, he picks up a Sailor Mercury plush doll and drops into the prize slot.
And a weird dino. He gets two. Because right before... He gets this right as he's getting the Sailor Mercury dino, something weird happens. Yeah.
What?
He's like, well, he's going for, he won the Sailor V. And this is, we learned his name is Joe the Crane Game Troll. And so right as he gets the Sailor Mercury, he, right before, he does something. We're not really sure what it is, but there's like a camera effect and a shake. And
I didn't notice it. I didn't notice it.
Weird dino pops up and then he wins both.
It makes sense with what he reveals later on. I didn't notice it, though.
Yeah.
When I took the note. So Usagi bumps into a classmate, Yumi. And Yumi explains to the boy is known as Joe the Crane Game Troll. And said that every time he plays, he gets a stuffed animal. He must have hundreds of them. And Usagi says, wow, awesome. Usagi turns to Makoto to get her opinion of Joe. Makoto has this glazed over look on her face. And she's just like him.
He's just like my senpai.
Colorful bubbles and stars float up in front of Joe's face, and Makoto lets out a breathy remark. My first love. Usagi tries but fails to bring Makoto back to reality. Joe is seen walking away from Game Center Crown with a large bag of stuffed animals. Suddenly, Zoisite appears.
What?
Yeah. So, I mean, this is how this goes in their world. Whoever's the active general or Dark Kingdom king that's you know, actively opposed to the guardians, you know, they pop up. I found you. He takes the crystal that Barrow gave him and tosses it at Joe. The crystal stops in midair and starts emitting yellow waves of energy, pulsing in front of Joe. Joe is quickly overwhelmed by these energy waves as he arches back and moans. A round void appears in the center of Joe's chest with a little heart-shaped crystal. Invisible in the void.
I gotta say, suddenly, the void really, like, it gives me the ick. It makes me think of my, like, it activates my, like, trypophobia. And I'm like, I hate it very much. But I would also like to point out that during this scene, the soundtrack is fire.
I didn't know.
It's so good. You gotta go back and just, like.
Actually, when I saw the void in Joe's chest, I thought, Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom. When he grabs it, the priest shoves his hand into his chest and pulls his heart out.
Kalima! Kalima!
Such a great scene. So after Zoisite throws the crystal at Joe, Makoto appears. Makoto says, stop that. You shouldn't bully people weaker than yourself. Zoisite curses and snatches the crystal back. He threatens Makoto for interfering. Makoto tries to attack Zoisite, but she dodges each of her attempts. And
yeah, but she's like willing to fight him, even though she's not a scout.
No, she'll fight anyone, it looks like.
I adore her.
And Zoisite said, and just what was that? And Makoto says, I'm not done yet. So I said, chuckles, says, how barbaric. And Makoto is slowly winning this fight. She's giving it the fight her all. She even grabs her earring and throws it at Joe. Just dodges the earring, but he fails to dodge the subsequent blow to the face from Makoto. And Zosia says, you prehistoric witch, you scarred my precious face.
You scarred my precious face.
I can't do his broody delivery.
You prehistoric witch, prehistoric you scarred witch. My precious face. Zoe Side's so over the top.
Just imagine Rather Queenie. That would be my note for that dialogue. Rather Queenie.
He's a dandy.
Usagi is frantically searching for Makoto. She calls out Mako. Just then she spots Makoto on a lower level, squaring off with Joe. Usagi runs to the area Makoto and Joe are still recovering their fight. Usagi rushes to Joe, who is on his knee and not looking too good. Makoto reaches out to comfort Joe. As soon as her hand touches his chest, Joe recoils and yells, don't touch me.
Rude.
Mind your own business. Leave me alone. Yeah. So he says, what's the problem? We're only trying to help. And Joe has a good lead on walking away from Usagi and Makoto. And Makoto runs toward Joe. Usagi says, what's going on here? Suddenly Luna speaks out. Luna says, I can sense it. I got a super evil aura from that guy. She brought. That means he might be from the Dark Kingdom.
So. What?
Yeah. Yeah. I would keep, if I was Sailor Moon, I would keep Luna with me all the time. Luna can sense stuff.
Luna, you know what I mean? Yeah. Luna is something special, but, you know, it might look a little weird if you have a cat with you all the time.
I don't care. I mean,
in this day, if it were.
I would want the advantage of her being able to sense if the Dark Kingdom is nearby, now, as opposed to having to guess. You know, one of my classmates is acting rather strange. I wonder if they've been infected by the Dark Kingdom.
I wonder what happened.
Yeah. So then Usagi says, wait, in that case, Mako and Joe are in serious danger.
Dun, dun, dun.
And, yeah.
Yeah, and then Mako-chan starts to stalk Joe, kind of.
Right. And he says to stop following her.
Yeah.
And she says she's just afraid others will try to hurt him.
Yeah.
And she jokes that maybe people are mad about all of his wins at the crane game. And she offers to be his bodyguard. And she asks if he could teach her how to win at the crane game. And
he's like, Joe, you couldn't do it.
She says you never do it. And
then he leaves.
Suddenly he grabs his chest.
He's a dick.
And then he grabs his chest and he hurries into the coffee shop. And he tells Makoto that he lets you enjoy his coffee alone. And so he shuts her down yet again.
Yeah.
And he catches up to see the coffee shop door close in Makoto's face. And he says, he's forgot an attitude. And then Makoto says, that's why I like him.
You see, he
reminds me of the guy who broke my heart. That's, I know. What is it with girls who like being treated like shit? I don't get it.
It's just, girl, you deserve better.
However, Usagi admires Makoto. To herself, she says, now that is the face of a girl who's in love.
Usagi?
I know. Usagi encourages Makoto to go into the coffee shop and talk to Joe.
My exact notes, by the way, are Makoto likes him because he's exactly like the guy who broke her heart. Yeah. Makoto, have some respect for yourself. Oh my god, please stop. This is a bad idea. Stop encouraging her, Usagi.
Yeah, Usagi's not doing her any favors at this point. I mean, he literally like shut the door in her face, and Usagi's like, no, you should go in there and talk to him. And so Joe's into the coffee shop, and he like gestures, and he allows Makoto to sit down. He explains the reason that she can't learn to win with the crane game.
Well, it should be noted first that as she sits down, he's like, don't get me confused. Don't get this twisted. I just didn't like you. I didn't like seeing you sit outside. It annoyed me.
It was too annoying seeing you sitting outside staring in, so I invited you in.
So I'd rather you sit here, but I still don't want you around.
Yeah. So he explains that the reason she could never, you know, be good at the skill crane like he is that she doesn't have this special power. And then he puts his hand out and he levitates an ashtray sitting on the table. And I was just like, that's so awesome. And it's like, there are not ashtrays in coffee shops anymore. There are no ashtrays
actually in Japan. Spaces. There might be.
But they still allow it? Okay.
They still have smoking sections and non-smoking sections in Japan.
Wow.
At least they did 10 years ago. I don't know if anymore, but 10 years ago when I was there, they did.
I just imagine Jen Alpha doesn't even know what an ashtray is.
No, maybe they do. Maybe Jen Alpha in places where pot is legal know what an ashtray is.
There you go. And then McCrone asked him if he considers that like cheating, that he has telekinesis. That would be the skill that he has.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what to call it, but that's not telekinesis.
It's
but you can move objects with your mind.
Yeah.
And he says no. He says it's not cheating.
He says it's not cheating. I don't care.
And then at that moment, a waitress comes over and to take McCrone's order. And at first, she orders rice something.
Extra large curry rice. Order that
at a coffee shop. Then she quickly changes her order to a more reasonable one, which is like tea and milk or something.
Milk tea. Milk tea is a very specific. It's not just milk and tea. It's like a very specific thing. It's milk tea. It's very good.
So then we cut to the waitress who we want to see McCrone talking to, and we realize that it's Zoysite.
What?
Joe and McCrone jump up, and Zoysite knocks them away with some sort of energy blast. Mm-hmm. So Zoysite has whatever spell or ability that he has. It's like a shockwave. It's like a, you know what I mean? Some sort of
shockwave.
Yeah.
And
McCrone is momentarily knocked unconscious, mm-hmm. and Joe begins to run away.
Yeah,
and
Usagi takes him to task.
Yeah, and she's like, "You're crawling away and leaving Mako behind." He said, "I don't care about her. She's the one who decided to follow me." And
I'm not in the giant girls anyway.
Usagi says, "What's that? You think of yourself as a man acting this way?" And Joe says, "She's not my responsibility. Plus, giant girls really aren't my type." And we get cut to a close-up of Makoto's shocked look.
Rushed.
Yeah. And Zoysite casts another one of these concussive blasts at the plate glass window. And he jumps through after it shatters. And then he starts doing giant hops down the sidewalk. It's so
He's
weird.
A dandy.
He jumps out this broken window. He gets to the sidewalk. And he starts jumping like he's on the moon.
Yeah.
True. Propel himself down the sidewalk.
Zoysite is extra about everything.
And then Luna remarks, "I knew it. That guy is from the Dark Kingdom."
Because he's extra.
Yeah. What gave it away? That he could do magic and that he was attacking people?
What gave it away? This, he has the same uniform that the other douchebags had.
Exactly. And so Sailor Moon asks Makoto if she's okay. And Makoto replies, "That's the second time a guy I liked said that. About referring to that she's giant." So at this point, I'd like to ask, how tall is she? How tall is Jupiter?
Oh, it's almost like I had this prepared because I have it open. And she is.
I'm going to say 6'1".
Where is her height? Yo, I tried to be prepared. Okay.
Did they make her so large because Jupiter is the largest planet?
I couldn't tell you. How tall is.
I mean, I could Google it.
No, I'm not Googling it. I'm asking the intern.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Rude.
Well, I don't live with the intern, so I have to do stuff myself. All right, well, let me know when the intern gets back to you on that.
She's 5'5".
She's 5'5"? That's not giant. 5'5"?
It is in. It is in Japan.
5'5" and tall?
Huh? She's also 14. Oh. And also, by the way, I'm 5'7".
Girls who were 6 feet tall when they were 14. Carolyn Frisk, who was 6 feet tall when she was 14. She played a lot of basketball.
That makes sense. Yes, she is, she's 5'6", actually. Would you like to know the height of the other three? Usagi is 4'11".
4'11"?
Yes.
I just don't think of Japanese people as being that much shorter.
Ami-chan is 5'2", and Rei-chan is 5'3".
Rei is 5'3"?
Yeah.
So
comparatively, she is a giant girl.
So Makoto is just 2 inches taller than Rei.
Yes.
Okay.
Two or three, depending on the resource.
I'm just saying visually, she's 6'1". So after she laments that it's the second time that a guy she liked said that she was a giant, she says, "I've had it," and she runs out of the coffee shop. Joe runs after Zoysite, he runs into Zoysite. Yes. Zoysite says, "You don't have to run away. After all, you're one of us." And Joe questions, "One of you?" And Zoysite doesn't explain what he meant. He never explains why he's one of it. Instead, he points his arm towards Joe and says, "I'm taking your rainbow crystal."
And Joe's crystal in his
chest. it's red, not rainbow colored. Mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier. I just, you know, crystals give off like
some crystals do. Some crystals don't. Rubies are a crystal, and they're not a bunch of colors.
I think of crystals as like clear quartz, and that when light hits them, they give off an iridescent, you know, multicolored effect.
Some crystals do, but not all crystals do. That,
yeah. Listen, I toured with the Grateful Dead. I literally saw colors shoot out of crystals when I was tripping on LSD.
Listen.
Like swirling rainbows just come shooting out of these crystals.
That's coming from the crystals. That's coming from your brain.
That's what I was hoping for when I heard we were going to have some rainbow crystals. I was like, cool. I haven't seen that in a while. Anyway, Makoto arrived just to see Zoisite steal Joe's rainbow crystal.
Mm-hmm.
And Sailor Moon arrives and says,
just in time to see Zoisite steal Joe's rainbow crystal.
Yeah. And she says, yeah. And also, when did she transform? That was my...
Sometime in okay. the... How did she excuse herself from Makoto in the cafe to go transform?
Well, Makoto ran away from her. She said, that's it, after being called a giant girl. She takes off, leaving Usagi in. So Usagi would have had time to transform undetected as she was kind of tracking Makoto. But you know, and obviously she knew that, and, you know, this is the second time Luna has said the Dark Kingdoms in, you know,
yeah,
in play. So it was pretty much time to transform.
Basically.
Sailor Moon says, hold it, you, to Zoisite. And Makoto is shocked to see Sailor Moon.
She's like, oh, Sailor Moon?
I know. And Zoisite says, oh my God. You're a little too late, Sailor Moon. And Sailor Moon asks Zoisite who he is. Like, he knows who she is. You know what I mean? Who are you? And he introduces himself as one of the Dark Kingdom's four kings of Hammond.
Yeah.
Zoisite. Yeah. And then he says, I think I'll let Gameson take care of the rest of this.
Go, Gameson.
He's like, I'm Zoisite, one of the, you know, four kings of heaven. But I think I'll let Gameson take care of it.
Can't be bothered.
And he disappears in a swarm of flower petals. And Makoto goes, he vanished.
Yeah. He vanished with his laugh, because once again, extra.
Zoisite doesn't really, he doesn't really need to be there anymore. He got his rainbow crystal.
He's not, so, yeah, exactly. He's not there for fighting. He's there for crystals.
And he knows what's going to happen, which is that a cyclone encircles Joe and a Yoma appears. That Yoma looks very much like a Red Power Ranger, in my opinion.
Yes.
But anyway, and so what I loved was that when he appeared, he announced his name.
Gameson.
And all I could think was, just like a fucking Pokemon, man. Because you know how when Pokemon spawn, they say their name?
This is the first, Gameson is the first monster of the day in the series to do that.
Right. But do you know what I mean? In Pokemon, when they try the Pokeball, they say their name. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I was just like, yeah, this is like Pokemon.
Ah, man.
Gameson sports a long shaft from his right hand with what looks like a croquet mallet at the end. And he takes several swipes at Sailor Moon.
And there's arcade noises being made.
Huh?
There's arcade noises being made with all of the stuff as his arm transforms into a mallet and all that stuff.
Uh-huh.
Arcade noises.
Okay. I noticed
he's
that.
An arcade guy.
He's a what?
He's an arcade guy. He's Gameson, which is short for right, Center.
Okay. I thought he was a fucking monster. He is
a monster.
Like a
he's just power, an arcade monster.
Monsters, to me, have like fangs and stuff. They don't wear Power Ranger suits and sport croquet mallets.
Listen, you're going to have to deal with a lot of weird monsters coming up.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Yeah. I'm open-minded. Suddenly, Makoto picks up Gameson. He picks him up. I love that. See, that's why she's 6'1", okay? Because at 5'6", she's not lifting up any men. And she says,
I can barely pick up Joe. And I'm 5'7",
And Makoto, after she picks him up, she says, and just what it is you think you're trying to do to my hero, Sailor Moon.
Which, ooh.
I didn't realize that Sailor Moon was her hero.
No.
I did know that she liked the Sailor V game, but it turns out
Sailor Moon's getting pretty popular in the Juban area because she saved a lot of people.
Yeah.
And there was a whole time with Jadeite, and he announced it to the world, and no one really acknowledged it after that night when he made a huge thing in the sky about Sailor Moon.
Yeah. Okay. So then at that point, something very special happens to Makoto. And what is that?
A green imp shows up, or not green imp, a green four, rather, shows up on her forehead. Which means that Luna gets to do the thing.
Okay. Question for you.
Yeah.
The symbol for the number four, the same one that we use in Japan, do they use the same character for the number four?
And that's also not a number four. It looks like a number four, but it's not.
Okay. Here's why I thought it was number four. Because Sailor Moon was like number one. Sailor Moon was number one. Sailor Mercury was number two. Sailor Mars was number three. And so all of a sudden, Jupiter has a four on her forehead.
Remember how Sailor Mercury had a blue symbol on her head?
No. And I don't remember that at all.
Mars had a red symbol on her head that kind of looked like the symbol
That was my question, Maddie. Was did Ami have a two on her forehead?
She did not. Had a symbol on her head that looked kind of similar to its.
So what is the sign that appears on Makoto's forehead? What is that?
It's the symbol for Jupiter as a planet.
You know, the symbol for Jupiter was the number four. Very interesting. Because that's a fucking number four.
Okay. It is. It definitely is. But it's also the symbol for Jupiter.
Okay. So when that appears, Luna says, that sign.
Yeah. And so, Luna gets to do the thing.
Right, exactly. So if Luna can detect the Dark Kingdom, how come she can't detect a Sailor Guardian?
But she can't. She can, but she also can't. Like, from the beginning, she's been like, something's weird about that girl. Something's weird about that girl. I have my concerns about that girl. Yeah, and she did the same thing with Rey, Tommy.
She literally had to wait until the sign for Jupiter appeared on her forehead.
She had to do the same thing for the other two. Like, the only reason she didn't have to do it for Sailor Moon was because she removed the thing. So
that's right.
Luna was like, I guess you get to be the person.
So then at that point, Makoto throws James then basically across the park.
Yes.
He launches him across the park.
Yeet.
James says his name again.
James.
And then a pincher sprouts out of his hand and it grabs Sailor Moon.
It's a claw from a claw game.
Yeah, and then, I missed that. Makoto starts to run towards Sailor Moon, and Luna stops her and tells her she's a Sailor Guardian and gives her a transformation pack.
Yeah, and she's like, whoa, you can talk?
I know, you talk.
Which is the appropriate response.
Yeah, but she that's about it, though. She totally believes that she is this thing, and she just takes the transformation pen.
I guess.
And repeats after Luna, Jupiter power makeup. And then she becomes an asexual nude who gets dressed up in a Sailor Guardian outfit. I don't like the color scheme to her outfit.
I love it.
I really don't. I don't.
I didn't used to like it when I was younger.
Those are not complimentary colors.
They really are.
It's like
a watermelon, my dude.
It's the color scheme bothers me. Like the other three, they've got good outfits.
So does she.
Like, no.
Yes, she does.
That's not a magical girl outfit. That's all I'm saying.
It 10,000% is. And maybe it's a little more tomboyish because she's a tomboy magical girl.
Terrible color scheme.
It's a wonderful color scheme.
Well, and here's the thing is that she's the most kick-ass of them. Mm-hmm. She didn't have a really good outfit.
But she's got like great shoes too because she's got like the little like short boots.
I didn't even notice the shoes because the color scheme was so awful.
The color scheme is great.
So,
for those of you who don't know, the color scheme for Sailor Jupiter is a dark foresty green for her skirt, her
like a pink
collar, and her shoes. And then for her bow, her bows, they are a light pink.
Yeah, terrible.
It's wonderful.
So anyway, we have the reveal. She is now Sailor Jupiter. And she immediately dodges an attack by Game Sun. And then she calls out, Jupiter, my guardian planet, bring forth a storm, summon the clouds, and bring down your thunder. So she immediately embraces that she is Sailor Jupiter.
Hell yeah.
And then she brings the noise with the attack. Supreme thunder. And she calls out Supreme Thunder. A bolt of lightning hits on her head? Which the
lightning rod?
It's a lightning rod that's on.
Tiara?
It's kind of like a tiara. And
yeah, that's why.
A little lightning.
That's why it's Moon Tiara action.
Okay. I know. But hers has a lightning rod. Hers has a lightning rod. Yes. And lightning
rod comes has a visor.
Okay, very good. And the bolt of lightning becomes a ball of lightning. And she shoots it at Gamesen. And
it hurts.
Sailor Moon misheard what she called out when she did her attack. And she says, Supreme Sunday? I think it's great. And then Jupiter says, one more blast. And because the first blast doesn't kill Gamesen, but it does knock him back. And Luna's like, no, don't. That monster still has a human heart. I remember, he used to be a human being. Buzz killed Luna. And
damn it, Luna.
And then Sailor Moon says, then how are we supposed to stop him? And Luna says, you have to turn that monster back into its original form. And Luna does her thing where she flips in the air. And yeah, when she flips in the air, and at the arch of the flip, she summons an object.
Because, I love it when she does that.
I know. Because Luna doesn't have a backpack or pocket.
No.
So she has to go flip.
She's got a magical pocket dimension. It's common in all magical girl.
Well, right. But for whatever the filigree is, they have that kind of ability. Yeah.
Magical pocket dimension.
So here's the question. What was the first magical girl manga? Who invented the genre?
So we discussed this in a previous episode, but it was...
Well, I forgot.
It's been a while. I don't remember the name of the first, like, official magical girl thing.
Uh-huh.
But it is one of the series that Sailor Moon kind of pulled from in the style. But
how many years after that came the original magical girl story came out was Sailor Moon created? You know what I mean? Roughly.
It was called Sally the Witch, and it was 1966.
Okay.
But it didn't really take off that much. And it was like most magical girl stuff was inspired by like Bewitched and things of that nature. And then Sailor Moon came around and revolutionized it and made it into something different and pushed it. It still gave it magic, but pushed it away from like the magical witchy sort of thing. And then catapulted it into what it is today.
Right. Yeah, because... I believe that Sailor Moon brought a lot of fighting into the magical girl genre.
It very well might have.
It might not have been there before. At any rate, so what is it that Luna has pulled out of her interdimensional bag of holding?
A moon stick.
The moon stick.
It's the most original, well-thought name ever. And it is a pink stick wand type thing with
a crescent moon.
A gold bottom, and it's got a crescent moon on the top of it. And the crescent moon is very sharp.
And what does the moon stick do, Maddie? The moon stick turns monsters back to their original form?
It does. It turns monsters back into their original form. And if you would like a demonstration, I do have a replica of the moon stick that makes noise.
It comes with an enchantment. What is the spell that you have to call it?
Moon healing. Escalation.
Moon healing escalation. I don't think of healing. Okay, so here's the thing, right?
Yeah.
Like when I think of escalation, I think of something, you know, like a disagreement escalating into a brawl, right? Like,
yeah.
The situation certainly that escalated quickly, right? And I don't think of healing as an escalation. I think of healing is something that happens in kind of a steady timeline. You know what I mean?
Well, the definition of escalation is a rapid increase.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Or an increase in intensity or seriousness and intensification. Mm-hmm. And if you're thinking about it, this person has been turned into a monster. She is healing it, and she's trying to heal it fast.
Okay. It just seems like it should just be a cleanse, right?
Yeah. As this is probably the weirdest of her like attack phrases that I can think of.
Okay. Really?
So
I thought there was some strange shit coming up.
I mean, there is.
Okay. All right. Okay.
This one I feel like is the one that I dislike the most, but I do have that, and it makes that proplica, and it does make the exact same noises that the wand does in the anime.
I'm guessing that for the rest of the series, this is the only time that the yomas are going to be humans that were transformed into monsters. So
this is.
She's not going to have to healing escalation too many monsters other than these seven. Because then we see Gamesen turns back into Joe.
Yes, but before he turns back into Joe, the start of my absolute favorite trope occurs.
Okay.
And that is the death phrase. Because as Joe's, as his Gameson is hit by the healing, Gameson goes, refresh, and then turns back into Joe. So it's one of my favorite things. First monster to do that. Here's a couple of firsts for Gameson. Gameson really tops the charts.
Well, refresh is a gaming term.
Mm-hmm. So Gameson is the first monster of the day in the series to repeatedly say his own name.
Mm-hmm.
He's also the first humanoid monster of the day who is male.
Yep.
And the first one to be created from a human. He's also the first monster of the day to scream a set phrase.
Yep.
Yep.
All true.
Yeah,
did you notice he was did you notice he was missing from the fight?
Missing from the fight, but not missing from my heart.
Mercury and Mars weren't there.
I was thinking of Bay.
I was going to get to that, but yeah, she wasn't there either.
That's because she wasn't in enough danger. She has to be in danger.
She really wasn't. I mean, she wasn't doing too well against the croquet mallet.
No.
But the thing is, Makoto came in and saved the day.
Yeah.
She
was probably like half transformed. Like he was just about to like put on the other leg of his pants and the top hat. And then he was like, oh, never mind. The warning signals have turned off. I don't need to go. Yeah. Okay, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm good.
That's totally what happened.
Yeah.
Let's just wrap up the episode real quick, and we'll talk about what wasn't there and what. Okay,
so much.
All right, so Luna proclaims that Makoto is Sailor Jupiter,
da-da-da-da!
And that that makes four of them, and that Sailor Moon is the default leader of the Guardians. And why is that? Because she has the fucking moon stick.
That's
what makes her the leader.
The moon stick proves who the leader is.
Yeah.
You get a moon stick, you're the leader. It's like, you know, you get to talk Sailor
Mars
when you have the Kong.
Sailor Mars isn't going to get the moon stick. It's not the Mars stick. It's the moon stick. So
true.
Sailor Moon, not only having been discovered first by Luna, was the obvious choice for leader.
I mean, yes. She's the most responsible and the most dedicated and the most coordinated.
She lacks leadership qualities, actually.
She is great at bringing people together, which is a great leadership quality.
But I mean, according to Luna, all you need is the fucking moonstick, and that's, you don't need leadership qualities. I got the moonstick, bitch.
I mean, Luna would know best.
Okay. All right, so we wrap up the episode of Game Center Crown, and Makoto is playing Sailor V video game.
She's taking out her heartbreak on video games, which is as everyone does at some point in their life.
And she says something like, "Who needs boys?"
Yeah,
and then she dies because that's in truth
anger.
Sailor Jupiter or Makoto is obsessed with boys.
Yes,
and I think that's why she got killed in the Sailor V game is because her mind was on boys. And then we see Motoki is back at work, and he's talking to Sailor Moon, and he said that he heard Joe the Crane Troll was at the game center yesterday.
And Usagi's like, you didn't miss anything. Anyways, here's your friend.
And so Usagi introduces, it's her new best friend, is how she introduces her.
Yeah.
And then Makoto says, you're just actually like my former love who
he's
broke my heart.
Just like my senpai. The one who broke my heart.
And then Usagi says, just yesterday, he said Crane Joe reminded you of him.
His voice. His voice is what reminds me of my senpai.
Basically everything that Motoko looked at reminds her of this guy that broke her heart.
I mean, I'm not saying it's one of my other favorite tropes from the show.
But
I do love it.
The show officially ends with Luna going, brother.
Yeah. Luna is just so done.
Yeah. Luna's excited that she found another Sailor Guardian, and then she realizes that this one's just as broken as the rest of them.
Damn it.
So Mars and Mercury weren't at the fight.
No.
There was no tuxedo mask.
No.
And so the other thing I wanted to address is this.
Yes.
Is that. So Nephrite died.
Yeah, he straight up
died. Like, he died saving Naru.
He died the death of many deaths.
In the anime, he died saving Naru. However, in the manga, Nephrite dies at the hands of Sailor Jupiter. Sailor Jupiter eliminates Nephrite in the manga.
Mm-hmm.
And her introduction to the group is much different than this one.
Yes.
Yeah, so.
The manga, this entire arc is so truncated in the manga. Mm-hmm. It goes first story in the manga, Sailor Moon, then like one story where she's by herself, then Sailor Mercury, then Sailor Mars, then Sailor Jupiter. Like every single one is the next.
But there's a Tuxedo Mask one before Sailor Jupiter.
Yeah. What? Why would we need to learn more about Bay? We need to learn everything about him. He's perfect.
Because he's the one who tells her to believe in herself.
Yes. She couldn't do it if he wasn't there.
All right. Well, that takes us. Do you have anything else to say about this episode?
I have to say that I really love it. I'm glad we've gotten Sailor Jupiter. Gamesen is... this little arc that we're going to have with Zoisite is so good. And I really love, like, none of it happens in the manga. None of it. But I really love it. Because it's just like, it's going to get so goofy.
Can I tell you what I like?
Goofy.
I like Supreme Thunder.
Supreme Thunder's really cool.
Now they've got a fucking attack worth of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Fire Soul did stuff.
But I mean, what would you be more? I'm much more afraid of getting hit by lightning than I am of fire. I'll tell you that right now. And just as an attack, lightning and thunder sound much more powerful than.
Yeah, but also they say that burning alive is one of the most painful ways to die, and lots of people survive being struck by lightning.
Lightning strikes, correct.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. Technically, they were in the electromagnetic field of the lightning strike. If you were in the direct circuit of the lightning bolt, you would die for sure.
Yeah.
It's just that you're nearby. You're caught in the electromagnetic field. So when people say that they got struck by lightning and they survived, it's like, well, no, you actually didn't. You didn't get struck by lightning. You were close enough to it that it harmed you.
Okay. It's like a fishing story. You're going to exaggerate it a little. Come on. First we're going to talk about social media.
Okay.
So, of course, as always, you guys can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/AcrossTheMooniverse. Or is it Moonycast? Is it Moonycast? Facebook.com/Moonycast. Hold on. I'm going to check it real quick.
Across the Universe, I think. I can't remember. I couldn't tell you. I didn't have to look it up. I just hit the link.
Moonycast. Yeah. You can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/Moonycast. That's MOONIECast. And I say this every time, but it'll eventually happen. I am eventually going to set up a blue sky for us, and I will announce that once we have it set up. You can reach us anywhere we are by using hashtag Moonycast, and of course you can go to our website at acrossthemooniverse.castus.com.
My money is actually on Elon Musk selling X before you ever do that, and then we can go back to Twitter. Yeah. All right. So
who knows what'll happen.
In the next installment of Across the Universe, we're going to talk about season 1, episode 26, Restore Naru's Smile, Usagi's Friends.
Usagi's Friendship.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'm excited. Yeah, because it's important, I believe, to follow up on that storyline because Naru lost the man she loved.
Naru went through a lot. She had...
He died saving her. I mean, that is a lot to process. Imagine the survivor's guilt that Naru is dealing with.
So they're going to
restore Naru's smile. I think Naru's almost my favorite character in this show.
I love Naru. She's so great.
I like how quickly she went bad, too, for her boyfriend.
In the...
She's stealing jewelry.
In the original dub, she was named Molly, and she had a Brooklyn accent.
What?
Yep. Because Naru, Osaka, it's like Osaka is obviously a region in Japan, and it's the common trope in anime is that people from Osaka are kind of like hicks, so a lot of the time they'll get country accents.
Okay.
So for some reason they decided to give Naru a Brooklyn accent and call her Molly in the original dub. I don't know why, but they knew she needed an accent, and she was just like, Serena! I can't do a Brooklyn accent, but it was bad.
Yeah, it was bad. I don't think of Brooklyn as being hicks. People in Brooklyn are street smart.
There were a lot of
obviously in the original a southern dub. Accent, a nice Tennessee southern drawl would have done the job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But no. Brooklyn it is.
Bell or something. Brooklyn.
All right. Well.
Interesting choices. Yeah. So we're following up on restoring Naru to a good state of mind after losing the man that she loved. rather like violent
brutal fashion.
And sad.
Yeah.
And the thing with it is that they never had a chance to really explore their love.
No.
You know what I mean? They never got to get the chocolate parfait. So sad. But Nephrite was in denial of his feelings for her for the longest time.
True. It's true.
That was basically the way I look at it is now is now fucked for all future relationships. Whoever she dates in the future, I feel bad for that guy. She's coming in with.
I have so many comments.
She's gonna have some heavy baggage. That's all I'm saying. Her romantic relationships are just basically fucked. So anyway, all right. So that does it for me on this. Happy Moon Day, everybody, and I'm out.
Happy Moon Day, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye.